This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 6A, 800 feet above sea level at Intergalactic Planetary Studios on the corner of Trashview and Nata Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenating radio waves. This keeps your brain at a tasty, toasty, and crispy 420 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of subliminal statism out of your head. And it's working. I can see it. Can you feel it, Jeremy?
You can see it, man. I want some of your heaven. Yeah, man.
And as always, this show is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and the agents thereof. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org.
Right.
All right. Yeah. So how you doing, Jeremy?
I'm good, man. Yeah. We're here. This is the Freedom Fiends. And that's Shane. I'm Jeremy. And no John tonight. We had our reunion a couple of weeks ago, but you and I just finished doing a recording for our other show as now you are the fourth musketeer over at the Seeds of Liberty. We just got finished recording over there and figured, you know, in order to save time in both of our lives, we might as well just jump on and do a show right now. So
yeah.
Yeah, man, I'm doing all right. You know, we had a very interesting conversation that people will hear on the Seeds in a week or two. That went a lot of different directions, among other things. Though I don't even remember how we got there, but we ended up 9/11 ended up coming into the conversation, and then I brought up the story of what happened to me on 9/11, which I think I've told on The Fiends before, the fact that even though I lost a family member and a couple of friends and family members and of friends and stuff like that, you know, a bunch of people I knew, basically, unfortunately, I wasn't aware of what happened until about noon that day. And this is also, you know, I was living in New York at the time and I was at work and everybody else at my job knew what was going on almost instantly, but didn't tell me because I was in the back of, like, we rented out an entire floor in this office building in this business park when I worked for this computer, when I was working for this aerospace company that did they were doing wireless internet before FiOS and Verizon and all, you know, well, that's the same thing. Jesus, Cablevision, DirecTV, they were doing it before all these other people were doing this stuff. And, you know, but it was basically in business parks and very small scale things, but very big projects with, you know, a lot of money involved and stuff like that. But I was working for them and we had rented out an entire floor and my quote unquote office was the production lab on the opposite side of the building from where everybody else, where all the offices, like the HR and the president and the vice president and all the other people, like their offices were clear on the other side of the building. So when everybody found out what happened, they all ran downstairs to the deli that was in the building where everybody else from all the other offices in the building all ran down to see what was going on. But everybody just ran and didn't think to tell me. And because I was locked in the back already working hard, at putting computers together by myself, listening to music, I had no, like, I had internet back there, but I wasn't like checking the news sites or anything like that for any reason. I just had music cranking and I was just totally zoned out for 3 hours. And I had no idea until I happened to look, I happened to get a message from somebody. And that's when I was like, oh crap. Like, what the hell happened? But I was totally clueless, despite being less than 45 minutes away from Ground Zero. I think it was only like 25 miles. It's 45 minutes without traffic. And that's on a really, really, really good day. But yeah, like being that close, I had no clue. And I remarked on the Seeds of Liberty that I think, unfortunately, I may have finally come to a realization that that may have actually coincided with the point in my life where I had a really bad problem with the cocaine. And I took it so far that I went from doing it like on a Saturday night thing to doing it all weekend long to bringing it in during the doing it like on a Wednesday night and then starting to do it at work too. And I was doing it while I was working there, and it might have coincided, which would explain why I was wired and building computers for 3 straight hours without taking a break. So we brought that up, and you actually, when we jumped off that recording, you said you actually had your own story about that. So I figured we might as well get into that before we get anything else. So what do you got to tell me about your story, Shane?
Okay, so on the morning of 9/11, I didn't actually find out until about noon also. I actually was working second shift at the time and would typically not get up until noon anyway. But the house that I lived in, we kind of split with a friend of mine. He had a room in this house and I had a room, and he had a landline in the house, and the landline was ringing off the hook all morning long, and I just let the machine get it because, you know, I was trying to sleep. Well, then I finally get up about, you know, noon, and I went and answered the landline that was ringing, and it was one of my other friends that had told me. He's like, "Oh, they attacked us, or we got attacked." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Oh, New York, the Twin Towers, they were attacked. They both collapsed." And I was like, "No way." I was like, "That's bull humor, right?"
This is like the worst practical joke ever, man.
Exactly. He's like, "No, dude, turn on the TV." And so I turned on the TV and was, you know, waiting for the replay of the whole thing. And as he told me that, you know, they both fell down, I pictured, you know, like when you're chopping down a tree and it kind of like tips over.
Like timber.
Yeah. I thought, wow, that's taking out a huge.
Taking out like a whole entire, like, you know, blocks like and blocks block. And blocks of buildings. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, man, that is going to be a huge mess. And I just didn't believe it, especially if both of them fell. So then I watched the replay and the first one fell and it fell nice and flat. And I was like, wow, they got super lucky on that one. That could have damaged like adjacent buildings and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then I saw the second one fall and I was like, all right, no way. This is too weird.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to think of it at that point.
Yeah, it was back then I wasn't even thinking on any levels of like how weird it was or whatever, because, you know, even though I missed it by 3 hours, once I was immersed in it, I was immersed in it, because, you know, I found out right away, like as soon as it was some friend, I don't even remember, somebody sent me a text message. And I had to go check, you know, same as you, I had to go look really quick because I didn't really believe them. And then I immediately called my house where my grandmother was. Because she was like the, you know, my nana used to be, you know, rest her soul. She was like the communication hub for the family. Like everybody told her everything. So she usually had all the information about where people were, where you could find them, but all this stuff. So I called her immediately. I'm like, who do we have to worry about? Like, because I couldn't think off the top of my head who worked at the Trade Center. You know, I knew somebody did, at least somebody did. I just couldn't remember who it was. And, you know, as soon as that happened, then I'm off and running. It's like, oh my God, of course, now my cousin's missing. And then I'm getting word about all these other people that I know through other, you know, or people that I know that they know and that type of thing, you know, friends of friends. It's just like, it was such a nightmare. And then I immediately got thrust into work because I was still working for said aerospace type company or whatever they actually called themselves at the time. I forget. We were relatively small scale, and the majority of the work that I did was in the business park that we had our building in. But there were a couple of clients in Manhattan, which I had never dealt with. And it used to be the job of friends of mine, and like other people too, but more like the last person who had been there had been the friend of mine who had gotten me the job and then had ended up quitting because he got into a fight with the president, and he quit expecting me to follow him. But I was in a position where I, you know, really needed the money. And it was like, dude, I know you're mad, but like, you know, I think you overreacted, and you know, I don't want to quit, you know, that type of thing. So I ended up getting left all by myself in the computer lab. Like, that's how I learned how to work on computers and stuff, which is why I still have a hatred for them, because I can build them, like physically build them is no problem for me, because I did it over and over and over and over again because of the, you know, very, you know, handful accounts we had in New York City. One of them was the Plaza Hotel, which most people have heard of. And we built like these mini computers, like, you know, mini desktops before like all the other technology was a thing. Cause again, this was the early 2000s. So like, you know, think like before, like all the like tablets were all the rage and stuff like that, like mini PCs for every room, just about in the Plaza. And there's like, I know there's like 800 something rooms, I think, on all the floors. And, you know, I obviously didn't build all of those because they had the account long before I got there. But I built a whole, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of new ones. And I also was repairing all the old ones and swapping them out and all other stuff. But that was one of the accounts. And the other account was this other company I had never heard of, but happened to be the building that they were housed in happened to be like right next door, like you could see the footprint of the towers standing on the 55th floor of this building, you know, now that they were no longer there and 107 stories in the air like they used to be, you right. could see straight down. That's how close I was. It was like within two blocks, within one block of the World Trader, you know, that whole section down there.
Yeah, I have visited there.
Yeah, I eventually made it down there too, although I just, you know, because even my cousin's wife, you know, his widow, she was never happy with the whole thing and how everything was handled and everything else, and you know, never got it. One of those people that you don't hear about that much, but like when the different groups of 9/11 survivor, you know, victims or whatever, or the victims' families, whenever they, you know, made the news and they were all mad about something, like, you know, she was usually involved in that. Because things were just, you know, the official story didn't really get, nobody bought that apparently. But anyway, yeah. So, that was the other client was like right down there, and I had to be there and deal with it and look at it every day for like 2 weeks. And there are a lot of times, unfortunately, since then that whenever I get, and I mean, I know I can usually chalk it up to the fact that I still haven't fully given up analog cigarettes, as I call them, because I still I vape largely, but I can't fully give up. I still smoke like anywhere between a quarter and a half a pack of cigarettes a day, you know, analog cigarettes, as I call them, because I can't help myself.
Right.
I just, with all the stress I'm under, I just don't have the willpower. I'm trying. It's just every time I try to go just to the vape, I end up having like one of the worst days. Like I've talked about it a lot on the show. I mean, heck, I just did a solo show a couple of week ago. Well, so what's up?
Yeah. You do smoke Pall Malls. So I wonder if it's something besides the nicotine, because I've gone digital and I didn't have any problem vaping. But I've switched over from American Spirits, which were fairly natural. And I'm pretty sure nicotine was the only addictive drug in that brand, but Pall Malls, who knows?
I used to smoke those too. Unfortunately, they're like $3 more around here, and the packs are at least $2 more, because the Pall Malls are still the cheapest cigarettes you could buy around here, which is sad because they're $9 a pack. Which again, which is I try not to smoke that many of them because I obviously don't have any money. Although for a long time I had a bunch stored up because I actually had purchased a couple of cartons at one point when I did have some money, and you know, that lasted me for quite a long time, which was great. But anyway, there was a reason.
So Pall Malls are $9.
Yeah, which is the cheapest ones, because, you know, and that's here. Wow, that's here on Long Island.
American,
yeah, I think American.
Yeah, I get American Spirits for like $7.25 here.
Yeah, around here the American Spirits are one of if not the most expensive brands of cigarettes, and I think they're like $11, and that's here out on Long Island. If you go into Manhattan,
wow,
it's even more expensive because they keep adding.
Jeez.
I think De Blasio recently. Actually, the new horrible mayor of New York, they've all been horrible, but he's just another, you know, he's a straight up Marxist. Well, quasi, he claims to be a Marxist, but I don't think he actually knows what he's talking about. But he, or he claims to be progressive at least. But I think that I recall him recently announcing there was going to be another additional sales tax put on, you know, just on cigarettes, you know, more sin taxes to try to convince people. You know, last time I was out there, which was quite a while now, because I really do try to avoid Manhattan like the plague, they were already up over $10 when they were still down below, you know, $7. I think was they were finally hitting $7 around here. They were already up over $10 in the city. So that was a couple of years ago. I think they're close to like $15 now for just like a regular pack in most places, you know, like any old pack, much less, you know, the American Spirits if they charge even more. So yeah, one of the many, 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 many reasons I need to get out of New York. And it's not just for cheaper cigarettes, although in the interim with dealing with my stress, that will be helpful, because I mean, even though I know from the experience of driving to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest the past 2 years and driving through Ohio, you know, through the entire width of Ohio, and driving through just enough of Indiana to be able to see prices. I know they're actually cheaper in Ohio, but even the more expensive ones in Indiana are still a lot cheaper than they are here in New York.
Yeah, it's still pretty close to Ohio compared to New York.
Exactly. Because I also remember, I know Michigan was more expensive too, but again, still a heck of a lot cheaper than they are here. So in the interim, when I'm still dealing with all the stress, then I'm sure I'll be still smoking a little bit. So yeah, that'll be great. But just overall, yeah, just the inflated prices around here are, just, you know, like I said, one of the many, 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 many reasons I've been trying to get out of here for, well, I've wanted to, I shouldn't say trying, because I haven't actually actively tried, unfortunately. I've wanted to get out of here for years, and I've talked about getting out of here for years. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I came close to, I thought I was going to make it a reality before Jen and I split up and then got back together. And then, you know, and then I finally put the plan in place again, you know, like a year and a half ago. But yeah, that's why one of the many reasons is just the prices of everything are so insane around here.
Oh, yeah. You know what else we have here that New York doesn't have?
What's that?
It's those giant sodas.
Oh. that never actually passed in the city, did it? Or they did something.
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember. No, Philly, I think. I think Philadelphia was actually the major city that actually ended up implementing it first. I don't think I think Bloomberg kept trying to get. I'd have to look that up, but I'm, as people should know from listening to any of my shows, I hate to look things up while we're doing shows, so I'm not going to look it up. So I'm sure there's some people that'll be listening and yelling at their phones or whatever they're listening to us on with the answer. But yeah, so. But I don't think he ever got that passed. I think they got some tax put in place that was actually, it was quickly proven even by like the mainstream media around here, how ridiculous, you know, the local mainstream media, how ridiculous the attempt was. Cause it's like, yeah, you're going to put a tax, you're putting a tax on these giant drinks, like anything over, I think they were only able to get away with a tax on anything over 3 liters. Cause there, I think, or some ridiculous like that at one point. Or I might be I may be misremembering that, but that sticks in my head for some reason. Because I remember thinking, "Oh, that's ridiculous! You barely even see those anymore, the three liter bottles." But it was like, or whatever. It might even be the 2 liters. But then a whole bunch of people were pointing out, well, you could just go by like 2 20-ounces or whatever, and then you're not getting the tax, right? Because and you can end up with the same amount of soda. It ends up being close to the same amount of money. It was like this whole big thing, and it was like, yeah, you guys are idiots. Basically, that's what it came down to. It's like you people are idiot. Like you're trying to impose these sin taxes, and you're morons. Like you can even the so-called quote unquote normies are starting to figure out that you guys don't economics very good.
No, they don't.
Oh, yeah, like, you know, like I said, that was the one saving grace for me. I said for the longest time that even when I was miserable about being stuck in New York, as I saw it, because for, you know, I definitely could have left at different points. You know, once my business was up and running, it was kind of hard for me to walk away from. I mean, I definitely could, but it would have been most unwise for me to do so. Because I had a very productive and very, you know, very great 12-year run at that, and I would have missed out on all that. That would not have been good. But you know, all the times I wanted to get out of here, it was just like the part of my justification or rationalization for like not pushing the issue was just like, well, you know, at least I'm not in New York City. Like I'm close enough to it that I have to hear about all the craziness that goes on there, and some of it filters down to out here out on Long Island. But for the most part, it's a much different animal to live out here in the suburbs than it is to live in Manhattan. And, you know, even though we're so close, like I said, in proximity, I think it's only like, you know, maybe 20 miles to the actual border of Manhattan for me, maybe something like that. I don't remember. Somewhere there, 20, 25 miles. So, you know, pretty darn close, especially when you're talking about anybody else who thinks in terms of, you know, living anywhere else in the country where having to drive more than half an hour to somebody's house or even a store on a regular basis is not unheard of. You know, not where everybody doesn't live literally on top of each other like they do out here, which is
right.
You know, another reason I always wanted out. But yeah, that was always my justification. It's like, well, yeah, the city's bad, and I've always, you know, I like going there for certain events and certain things that like only the city has, I guess. You know, obviously being a Yankee fan, like, you know, if I wanted to, I'd have to go to the Bronx if I wanted to see the Yankees. And, you know, I did take advantage of that, although not as much as I definitely could have being here. And even when I was different points throughout my life making enough money, it's just because I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't really want to deal with any of the boroughs. You know, Queens was like the extent. That was like the one I would, because that Queens is actually is technically part of Long Island, although people here who live here in Queens and in Nassau County, which is where I live on the other side of that border, would mm-hmm. would both argue with anybody else from here than say that we are not part of Long Island, or they are not part of Long Island. You know, that's one thing we actually agree on, I think. Where everybody else would look at it, go, no, if you look at a map, dude, you guys are all actually no, don't shush. You don't know what you're talking about.
So Queens is located on Long Island, but it's not actually part of Long Island.
At least according to the natives, that's the way we look at it. But like I said, Queens is the extent of where I would travel through somewhat willingly, unless it was, you know, a special event or something like that. And even then, it had to be a really special event usually in order for me to go out. or a girl was involved, you know, that happened too.
that was the reason I went to visit New York City. An ex of mine from a long time ago, we went to New York City to catch a Canadian cruise, but we actually spent a few days exploring New York, and we stayed with one of her friends in Confucius Plaza, which is, I think, in the financial district, not too, it's like kind of Chinatown, but it's just north of like Wall Street.
I've never actually heard of that. I'm so not versed on the city because I try to avoid it. I mean, I know a lot of stuff, but I don't think I've ever heard of that.
I think it's like a 20-something story apartment building in Chinatown. But not too far from like Wall Street.
Oh, that would be why. I don't know too many of things, the buildings, names of buildings and stuff like that. But okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I know the area. I've been there. I've probably seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. We did explore New York City, and we even went over to Staten Island, and she wanted to see, you know, the locals. And I was like, all right, well, Staten Island was interesting. It was the only place I've ever actually seen garbage just blowing around in the wind like tumbleweeds.
Oh, man. You had to go there to see that? Wow. Yeah, I grew up with that. Well, actually, that's not true. I mean, because I grew up in PA, largely in Pennsylvania, but like I came to visit New York quite often, so I saw it all the time. And yeah.
But we went to the Bronx, and we went to Central Park, and we went to Liberty Island. But yeah, Wall Street was cool. Visiting the financial district, seeing all that stuff. So
yeah,
I had a good time in New York.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's definitely something to be said for the, like I said, the attractions and whatnot that you can see there, just depending on what you're into, because there really is so much stuff, you know. And even if just from a historical standpoint, you know, from an architectural standpoint, from like, you know, there's so many amazing things. And so, yeah, I have no problem visiting there. But even then, like nowadays, you know, even if I didn't have my self-imposed ban, thanks for that, Murder Dog. That was Murder Dog deciding to get up and shake off all of a sudden after she was mad at me because I left her out of the studio for the Seeds recording. Because she hadn't eaten her dinner yet, and I wanted to give her an opportunity to eat her food, so I left her out. And she was all mopey when I opened the door. So I was like, "All right, fine, you can come in. That's how you repay me. Thanks." But yeah, I was I forgot where I was now, but the whole thing with Lake City is, like I said, it's a great place to visit. But now knowing what I know and looking at things, if I didn't have the self-imposed ban that I'm placing on myself that, you know, once I leave here, I never want to come back pretty much to the state at all. I can avoid it, like that's how much this experience has now finally soured me. Like it's been eating at me for years. I said, you know, I hated it when I first moved back here when I was 16 years old, and I moved up here in a huff because originally when my parents have been split up for years, and then 3 or 4 years later after they originally separated, my mom finally decided to move back up to New York to be closer to the family. And she was obviously taking my sisters with me, but at the age I was, you know, at 16, I was given the option to stay, and I was planning on staying. I never had a thought at all of coming into New York until my dad and I were left alone for a weekend and bad things happened. We got in a huge, horrible fight. He tried to ground me. I ended up sneaking out. That ended up even, you know, I ended up getting busted. That was, you know, with having people in the house when I was supposed to be grounded, it was even worse. Whole big mess.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com.
And I call my mom and I'm like, yeah, make room for me. I'm coming too. But like for the first, I don't even know how many years I was here. I was just like, this is so not me. Get me the heck out of here. Get me the heck out of here. And then I kind of resigned myself to being here. And then, you know, as I got older, I was finally like, I need to get out. And then once I became a libertarian, then an anarchist, I was like, yeah, it just, you know, whether you, no matter how you look at it, you know, even despite the amazing things and you know, the food and the culture and everything else that New York City and even some of the surrounding areas have to offer, it doesn't outweigh the insane prices, which are directly related to government. That's all that, you know, it's all jacked up around here because of the tax structure on everything. Well, among other things rather. So it's, you know, it's directly tied to that. So that's why I was starting to say before, it's a great place to visit, but even if I didn't have that self-imposed ban that I was putting on myself, once I finally get out of New Yorkistan, I'd have a hard time justifying coming back. And I still haven't even seen nearly half the things there are here to see because, you know, I barely spent any time there. You know, I lived in New York I don't think I was living in New York. Well, I had been living in New York again because I was born here and then I grew up in PA and then I came back here when I was 16. But I think I had been back in New York I'd been in New York for at least a few years and I had visited here plenty of times. And I had gone into the city plenty of times, but it wasn't until a friend of mine at the time came up to visit who had never been to New York before, who wanted to see all like the typical touristy sites, like the Statue of Liberty and all that stuff, that I actually went to go see all those things. the Empire State Building, I'd never been there. I'd been in the vicinity of it, but like I never did any of that stuff. You know, I wandered around the city a couple of times extensively, but the ones I can recall were all because I got lost. And I ended up walking in the wrong direction for quite a while, not realizing the whole number scheme. You know, I wasn't paying that much attention. And then I would end up going across the island for a while and seeing all the different name streets and not realizing where I was going and getting twisted and turned around. And So I technically saw large parts of the city, but I never actually stopped at a lot of this stuff. But even then. Still wouldn't want to go back. It's too darn expensive.
I don't blame you.
There's way too much government here. And I was saying that even before I've had to deal with the insane levels of government, and that's not even New York City. That's the Nassau County and the town of Hempstead within that, that I've had to deal with all the problems I've had. And just everywhere you turn here. I mean, I guess that's not true. I know there's some people, friends of mine that live further upstate in New York, and there's definitely less restrictions in a lot of those towns. And there, you know, a lot of those smaller towns, hamlets, whatever, they all more have like a leave you alone type attitude, which is nice. But of course, there's still the overarching New York state laws, which are onerous and tyrannical in their own right. Especially when you have somebody like Prince Andrew Cuomo at the helm and always trying to add more.
Oh, Prince now, is it?
I've always referred to him as Prince Andrew obviously very sarcastic way, but that's, yeah. Because I've been here long enough to like remember his dad. I remember, you know, Mario Cuomo. And I remember, you know, I've been around long enough to know Andrew since before he was governor. Like, I remember him coming up at the political ranks, and just the air about him was that, you know, I am the Schumer because who my daddy was, essentially. You know, he definitely had a lot of that to him. And so I've always referred to him disdainfully as Prince Andrew. And yeah, because I can remember doing that as far back as, I think I was right at the beginning of my anarchist. I was about to say phase, which is pretty funny because that's the one thing I when I mentioned earlier about a Jen and, you know, the stuff we went through and before and after, and the before part of it was when she thought I was still going through a phase when I was an anarchist. She actually said that to me at one point. She thought, I thought you were gonna snap out of it. I thought this was just a phase. That's why I didn't try too hard to understand it. But I think it was right around the beginning of that when he, well, Sandy Hook was what? Sandy Hook was 2012?
12, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, 2013 was when I really got in full swing with everything. And, it was just before that. And I was already referring to this as far back. I can remember referring to him as Prince Andrew as far back as then. When, because I was out there trying to, still trying to fight the good fight through the political system. And that was before my attempt to run for office, but I was still voting.
Change it from the inside.
Yes, I was still voting and still protesting. And, you know, I was actually, I think I got something happened. I wasn't able to make the trip up to Albany for one of the protests. I was actually scheduled to go to one of them. I was that invested. I was going to go take the 3-hour drive up to Albany to go be part of the big protest against the SAFE Act, for which anybody who doesn't know, I mean, you don't even have to be just from New York. This did make national headlines because it was right after, it was like almost the day after, or you know, sure, it was only a couple days after Sandy Hook. And all the, of course, as with any other school shooting or any other tragedy of the sort, where the media and the gun grabbers jump out and attempt to, you know, take control of the narrative immediately and, you know, try to get, you know, to throw the bills back out there, the ones that sit, as Dianne Feinstein pointed out during Sandy Hook, that the assault weapons bill that she put out to try to get passed directly afterwards had been sitting in her drawer for years, you know, some people were shocked to hear that at the time. I had just been starting to learn how horrible government really was, and how it was just like, it wasn't just this side or that side, or it wasn't just these people. It was like just everything. So I wasn't as shocked by it, because I was like, oh, and then I realized more and more that I learned that, oh, they all do this. They have these bills that just sit around and they wait for the opportunity to bring them out. And this was one of those opportunities. But besides her and Nancy Pelosi and the rest of those horrible people all trying to get that type of bill passed on a federal level, all the governors, especially the ones, not just the ones in Connecticut, and actually the ones in Connecticut were being more, the legislature in Connecticut was being more reserved, despite the fact that's where this happened. Kind of like what happened in Florida with the recent one in Parkland, where they took it to a vote in the Parkland in the Florida legislature, and they said, nah, yeah, we're not gonna do this. We're not gonna pass these bans. But the surrounding states, it often has this ripple effect. And especially when you're in a state like, you know, when Connecticut has something happen and then you're in a surrounding state like, say, New York, who prides itself on, the government prides itself on being super progressive and attempting to be the shining example for everybody else. And especially even more so when you have a egomaniac like Prince Andrew at the helm, and he immediately had to outdo everybody, even though this happened. And he didn't get on board and try to petition with everybody else to try to get the national level stuff. No, because he had intentions at the time. I recall he actually had intentions of running for president. He had aspirations of that. So he wanted to be on the, you know, be out there and make a real national name for himself, because the longstanding thing was like, New Yorkers won't, you know, before Trump, it was always like, you know, for the most part, New Yorkers aren't going to be getting president, because most people around the country have a negative view of New York. So,
true.
You know, especially anybody with the accent, you know, it's very, you know, that was a longstanding thing in politics, but Prince Andrew didn't care. He wanted to try, but he jumped out there, and with the SAFE Act, they came out with some of the most insane, like when they use the word draconian, you know, it does get thrown around a lot on both sides and the media and whatever, but like by the you know, real measure of that word, and if you're going to put it into the political scheme, yeah, these were pretty darn draconian. Like they went all out, and they passed this thing so quickly. Like, they got out ahead of every other state. Like I said, not even just Connecticut, all the other states were talking about it, where the gun grabbers really had a big force and were trying to push the legislature in their state to get things enacted right then and now, while the iron was hot, essentially. They pushed this thing through so quickly that it ended up being a a late night session of the legislature that ran past midnight before they all finally voted somewhere around 1:30 in the morning, something like that, if I remember correctly, something like that. And it was it passed overwhelmingly, and there was only a couple of people that voted against it, and they were out there going like, "This is insane! What are you people doing?" Like, they were having that, you know, the Ron Paul moments of like, "Has anybody actually read this thing? Has anybody had the out? There's no way any of us had the opportunity to read this. You're just going to pass it? Like, what's going on?"
Right.
And Cuomo, who had, you know, I think I'm pretty sure this was part of his campaign thing, that he was always, you know, and he, what he was kind of trying to make himself known for was that he would never make these split second decisions, and he would always wait the full 3 days that things are supposed to be allowed to sit on his desk before he has to make it, you know, veto it or pass, you know, sign off on it or whatever it is. And, you know, he dropped all that to make sure he was there in the Capitol building that night to sign off as soon as the vote was done and like put it into law right away. And, you know, among the other, you know, bans and whatever else they tried to implement, which thankfully, even in the insane land of New York, some of it had to be rolled back because they were the ones that passed the ban where it was only magazines were limited to 7 rounds. And it was, you know, as soon as they did it, people were like, "Hey, genius, you know nobody makes a 7-round magazine, right?" And but still, they had to. It took a little while before they finally had that one reversed. They had to relent and finally up it back to 10. They were so mad about that. But, you know, they had to jump on that stuff. And it's, you know, Cuomo is horrible, but it's not like the ones before him, you know, were much better. And they're all, you know, that's what I was saying. Even in the outskirts of the upper New York State, you know, if you stay away from the Capitol at Albany, if you go further up, you know, up north or out on the western part of the of what's considered upstate, you know, in those rural towns, you don't have to deal with the lower level, you know, the county level laws and that type of stuff. Everything's a lot more lax, and you're just kind of left alone. But no matter what, you still got to deal with the state stuff. And New York has always loved to try to be ahead of the curve. You know, a lot of people think of that with California. Like, California is a testbed for a lot of things. New York is in a lot of ways, too. That's why I want to get far, far, far away from it.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant.
We want that for you, too.
Yeah. But I'm even, like I said, even besides all that, I'm even hesitant, like, recommending people visit it. It's like, yeah, you could do it if you really need to see these things. But, you know, all the money you're going to have to spend, even if you try to do it on the cheap, it's so not easy. They don't make it easy at all. Like, the taxes are just on every level are so insane and so insidious and just intertwined into everything that, you know, whether they're, that was another thing that I think they tried really hard, but I don't think they're actually, I don't remember them being successful. It was the taxi companies tried to keep Uber out like they have, like they have in other places. Because, you know, the taxi medallions in New York City, you know, the thing you have to have in order to be considered an official taxi company and get the pretty permission slips from the state government in order to have one of those things, because they stopped giving them out. They don't make new ones anymore. You basically have to wait till somebody's willing to give theirs up or sell theirs.
Because they
gave out a whole bunch of them back in the day, and then like everybody was trying to open a taxi company. And of course, while government, which is put in place, especially the small R Republican form of government that's supposed to be in place, and of all places, you would think New York, one of the original colonies, you know, one of the ones where a lot of the things were born from before, you know, before it moved down to Philadelphia and then eventually, which we'll call it DC, you know, Massachusetts, like Massachusetts first and Connecticut and then all the way, you know, all the way down, worked its way all the way down before it ended up in DC. You know, a lot of stuff happened here, you would think. But no, they would just want to tax the ever living heck out of you over everything. And no, they don't care about freedom. And it's horrible.
Yeah. My impression of New York was that it's basically just a big Chicago. And I don't know. Chicago is not as good as it used to be. And I don't really enjoy visiting Chicago. I did enjoy my visit to New York, but it was my first and only time there. I'm sure it would get just as old as Chicago does. But that was basically my impression. It's just like a giant Chicago.
Yeah. I've never been to Chicago. Once I finally get the heck out of here and make it to Indiana, I'm sure I'll finally actually have to go over there. I'll probably have to go over there, unfortunately.
Well, be careful.
I won't want to go. Well, as long as I go to the north side, I'm all right, right? It's the south side where most of the issues were.
In order to get from Indiana to Chicago, you have to go through a place called Gary.
Oh, well, I can just drive around Gary if I really want to.
Yeah, I do suggest driving around Gary.
Yes, I have been told that. That was one of the things whenever people ask me, so you're moving to Indiana. You're not going to Gary, right? And it's like, it's funny because Gary, Indiana is one of those places that, you know, I've heard of my entire life. It's been in TV shows and movies. There's been mentions of it. You know, nothing ever describes the way it actually is right now, as I've been told by people who live in close proximity to it and have actually been there and seen what goes on there. But it's never described that way. It just always, I always remember it being mentioned. Like, that was the town, one town other than like Indianapolis. That was the one like random town in Indiana I always remember being mentioned. Gary, Indiana. But yeah, that's not a good place. Sorry, Murder Dog. You are not allowed out. No, you wanted in. You wanted in before the show. You know how it goes, pup. You got to stay. You got to stay for the whole time. Anyway, yeah, man. But yeah, it's the whole government thing. It just doesn't work. I was going somewhere else with the government thing before, and I forgot where I was going with that, unfortunately. But yeah, it's, you know, like I said, there's many reasons to want to get out of here. There's many reasons to not even want to visit because you have to get trapped in all that stuff. And like I said, unless you're really well off and you can afford to throw some money away, you know, then by all means, there are plenty of things. There's lots of cool stuff to see. There are, you know, there's pretty amazing museums. You know, there's a lot of historical stuff that you can't exactly find anywhere else. So, you know, it's worth it on that level, but you have to put up with that, and then you also have to put up with New Yorkers.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Despite the fact that I have lived here for, let's see, what is it? 41, 16, no, 14, geez, 27 years of my life. I still refuse to consider myself one of them. You know, I have some of the accent. It's not a full one, though. I've often been told that sometimes it's hard to place my accent because it's kind of mixed. And, well, that's true because I spent my more formative years growing up in the backwoods of Pennsylvania, you know, in a tiny little town of less than 200 people. So I had a, you know, it's much different dialect down there. And I have a lot, you know, and then it gets mixed with the stuff from up here and being here all these years. And I also have noticed, I mean, I know it's common, at least I've heard that it's common that, you know, you could pick up the traits of other people if you spend a lot of time with them and pick up similar affectations and stuff like that. I think I might have discussed this at one point. Years ago, I actually picked up somebody's stutter. Like, I never had a stutter that I can recall in my life until I was about 19 or 20 years old. And I was dating this one girl whose best friend, who they spent like every day together before I came into the picture, and they still managed to spend at least most days somewhat together while we were dating. They were around each other a lot, so I was around her a lot if I wanted to see the girl, and she had this very pronounced stutter, especially when she got excited, and like I ended up picking it up almost exactly. It was almost like I was trying to pick up her mannerism so I could like do her. Like, you know, kind of like, you know, make fun, like mock her or whatever, or like do a character. But wasn't it at all. It just came naturally. So like after about 6 months of it, I started doing it and then I couldn't stop.
Wow.
It was the weirdest thing. But even then, I didn't pick up her full. She had a very thick, because her mom was from Brooklyn. So she had and so she was born in Brooklyn. She had a very thick Brooklyn accent. You know, I have traces of that, but, you know, I do. I also thankfully didn't pick up the other end of the spectrum, the horrible Long Island, which Michael has made fun of multiple times on the show. I think even before I was around, but he's made it because he used to do it in reference to the formerly He Who Shall Not Be Named, Cantwell. But he's done it multiple times since me. But I've had family members, like my one aunt has a very pronounced one like that. But yeah, that's the stereotypical Long Island accent. When people think of it, they think of the very pronounced, you know, Long Island.
Yeah. I'm from like the northern Midwest, and we don't have that much of an accent up there. But I'm living in Cincinnati now, which is just across the river from Kentucky. And things really do change when you cross that river, let me tell you. There's a town in Kentucky called, I call it Louisville, and they call it Louisville, right?
I as well would call it Louisville. Well, up until I heard you say that, and now I remember hearing that before, and I don't understand why I've never called it that, because that makes so much more sense for me. Like the way I say certain words, that would actually fit in. Sorry, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt. Just, but I just wanted to make sure I interrupted.
It's just really funny how the only people who call it that are the people who pretty much live there. And so, if you go south of the river into Kentucky, then, you know, you'll run into that more twang accent, and everyone calls it Louisville instead of Louisville, which is what I grew up calling it. But it's definitely a noticeable difference just from going from the Ohio side of the river to the Kentucky side of the river.
Yeah, and you hear, well, it was funny because first I was going to say the natives, but then, like, as I was saying, you know, it happens to a lot of people. If you live in a certain place, you start picking up that, which is an interesting phenomenon, I think, because it's not like you were raised speaking a certain way. And even if you, you know, say certain words to try to fit in more, like how it ends up just permeating your, your entire being to the point where, like, years later, a lot of people, when they end up moving, their certain accents drop and they pick up other stuff and they pick up other affectations, and they just, you know, it's a weird cycle. Humans are weird, man.
Yeah. Have you ever heard a Bermuda accent?
I'm sure I have, but I can't, like, I was about to say picture it, but you know what I mean? I can't think of it.
It reminds me of being like half New Yorker, half British. It's really strange.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, whatever. That's, we always talk about the hope that one day government will just end up, you know, finally collapse. Well, as the fiends say, you know, we're here to laugh while Western civilization collapses. And hopefully the government does. Governments do. I talk against the ideas of like nationalism and stuff like that, but you can't get rid of these cultural things. You know, these things, just look what happens. These things permeate, but it is crazy that still, even with, you know, I think we were talking about earlier, but that might've been the other recording we were doing. I don't even remember now, everything's blending together, but, I think that was earlier, you know, the advancements in technology, just how, you know, how communication is so much quicker and people can find things out so much quicker, even with that.
Right.
And even with being able to communicate people where even, you know, a couple decades ago, talking to somebody just across that river wasn't the easiest. That, you know, there was telephones and stuff, but even then, like, that was considered long distance. So a lot of people didn't do it, you know, and you get charged for that stuff, you know? So even now, it's still like, you still find that very pronounced difference on that very small divide, you know, when you think about it, you know, in the grand scheme of things,
yeah,
like how close in proximity those people are. It's funny. Well, the other thing I thought of before, when you were talking about the whole, how do they say it? How do they say it? Cause I would say Louisville.
They call it Louisville. Down there in Louisville.
Oh, Louisville. Yeah. See, that would make sense to me. But as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, yeah, one of the other fiends, Randy England, always says, like, everybody else in the world would call where he lives Missouri.
Oh, but yeah.
He's like, people from there all look at the rest of us like we're idiots, because, like, no, it's Missouri. It's like, wait a minute, there's an A in there? Wait a minute, where?
Right.
But no, exactly. that's how they say it, because that's how their dialect.
Yeah, there's no A in Louisville either, but it sounds like there is. It's Louisville. Like Louisville.
it's supposed to be, I guess, would be the closer sound, right? Louisville.
Louisville.
Wait, there's not an E either, but we were saying Louisville, you know, kind of, so.
Well, like the French pronunciation of, like, Louis, you know, Louis.
Yeah,
that's what I think of it.
Those darn French. See, that's your problem. They corrupted you. don't go by the French language. It'll just ruin you, man.
C'est dommage.
I used to know what that means. Although
I think it means I'm sorry.
You said domage, and I thought of fromage, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's cheese. Right?
Yes, fromage is cheese.
Yeah, I may be able to remember certain words. I still think, I took 3 years of French. Like, that's how little I remember of, I mean, my schooling in general, I remember moments, but I obviously don't remember any of the things I learned, because it was all other than the basics. And even then, I had a lot of that down before then, as I've talked about before. I was already reading long before I got to school. And I think I got a little help with math while I was there. But other than that, I kind of, you know, everything else kind of figure out on your own. And yeah, anyway, so what else you got, Shane?
Well, let's see here. You know about the Korean peace talks, I'm sure. I was going to try to find a specific link, but it's been reported
I guess we should do
everybody at this point.
Some kind of recent events, but yeah, you're saying that earlier. There's actually some the news in the crypto world that's linked to that, right?
I found out about this through one of my YouTube.
Hold on, I was just gonna say yes. Huh? I was gonna say sorry for anybody who is living in a hole like I was on 9/11. Well, actually, apparently Shane and I were on 9/11. and you don't know, yeah, there's a whole bunch of hubbub going on with the peace talks, happening, and finally, possibly, the Korean War, you know. In case you didn't know, the Korean War technically has been going on, hasn't stopped, 70 years, something like that. even though it hasn't been a hot war, as they call it, there's no actual, it's just been kind of like, you know, and not even necessarily a cold war, just kind of like, we're at war with each other, so you can't pass this imaginary line at the moment, but we're not actually going to, you know, and we're going to station troops on either side of this imaginary line, and but we're not going to. Well, actually, isn't there really two imaginary lines, because they have the DMZ in between it, right? So there's actually imaginary lines on either side.
Right about that.
Yeah. So there's imaginary lines on either side of the DMZ. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, that's been you know, and of course that's a whole other topic we could talk about Trump getting accolades for this.
The credit.
Yeah, getting the credit, which is to say, which I would say if anybody else, any other president were getting the credit for this type of stuff. But yeah, so that's what's going on. There's
I think Dennis Rodman should get the credit.
Seriously.
For this.
Yeah, if anybody's, I've seen people talk about, because Obama got his Nobel Prize, so Trump should be getting his. And apparently I guess it was the South Korean leader allegedly said that, Trump deserves he thinks Trump should get the Nobel Prize for this. Puppet dictators praising their puppet masters. That's nothing new. So I don't really think I take that.
No surprise there.
Take that with a bucket of salt, you know, but anyway, so that whole thing's going on. But like I said, you mentioned to me earlier that there's actually something going on that ties that to the crypto world, which is something we used to talk about all the time on our Sunday shows. So we probably should mention something about that, because I guess things are going on. I should probably be paying more attention these days, because things are getting exciting again, right?
So it wasn't Trump and it wasn't Rodman. It was actually the two leaders of North and South Korea. They met and they started peace talks. This is just so I kind of unbury the lead if anyone hasn't heard this yet. But they're talking about actually having a peace between the two countries and a possible reunification of Korea. But anyway, some of the largest crypto markets are located in South Korea. And on some days, Korean volume is as big as any other volume. Sometimes it's the largest, like BitThumb is the South Korean exchange. And sometimes they do have the largest volumes on certain days of all of the other exchanges. So that's actually some pretty heavy hitters, some high rollers and big players there in South Korea. And the fact that South Korea has some of the more lenient like crypto laws in Asia. So this kind of signals that crypto might become more popular, not just in North Korea, but more so in Asia. And so they think that, you know, crypto could moon because of this Korean peace talk. But I think the crypto market is getting a little bit more savvy and they know not to jump in with, you know, both feet on everything anymore.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
So we're seeing a lot more healthy growth out of crypto instead of, like, you know, having the run-up like we did in December. People are being a little bit more cautious, but it does show that there's, you know, good reasons for steady growth. So, yeah, they do tie this to the crypto supposedly going up after the announcement, but there could be other reasons for that too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because they were predicted to climb again after tax season, because people didn't want to have to pay all this extra tax on their crypto or learn how to even do their taxes on crypto, because taxes are bad enough as it is. Now you try to add crypto into the mix, and you almost need like a tax guy who knows crypto. So
if you're paying taxes on your crypto, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Not that I'm telling anybody what to do, but you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, right. That is not a prescriptive statement.
Despite what whatchamacallit. I don't know if he's especially a sponsor, but but advertiser for the show, the creator of Cell 401, Virgil Verduva, would often argue with me about that you should just pay your taxes so they leave you alone. I would always argue that playing their game when it comes to the taxes is unfortunately totally defeating the purpose of why crypto is, but one of the main reasons that crypto is around and why it's been embraced so heavily by the anarchist and libertarian movement, more specifically than any other industry, and not industries, rather groupings, you know what I mean, collectives, if you were. Oh, collectives, did I trigger somebody? I'm sorry, I almost triggered myself. Wait a minute.
You got a mouse in your pocket,
apparently. Yeah. I don't have a mouse in my pocket, but right now I have a murder dog up my rear end. Apparently she is not happy with her decision, because it's either that or it's because I said her name before. She now has started to respond to murder dog, unfortunately.
So basically Virgil said, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and pay your taxes.
I understand the rationale, and I'm just busting his chops, and anybody who likewise, because of course, as I know I and others have discussed on this show before, when it comes to something like, say, I don't know, the book Ben Stone helped put out last year, the year before, whenever it was, that I had the honor of reading part of the audiobook for, the whole idea, if you're going to be fighting or, either trying to, whether you're going to try to take on the government in some form to help Russia, speed up its demise, or you're just going to try to avoid it as much as possible, or if you're going to go, like, say, the Vanu route or the agorist route or something like that, where you're going to go, try to go just outside the system, essentially, and work outside, work outside the system to bring the system down type of deal, then no matter which way you go, you have to deal with that in the present. And, I don't think that, man, I did it again. I lost where I was going with that. I'm not with it today, man. See, I need to stop making fun of my mother. It really is karma.
It's that age associated memory impairment.
It really is, man. Can't even blame it on the cannabis, because I've been good lately. I've been good today. where were we talking about? We're talking about the crypto thing. And, yeah.
Oh yeah, paying taxes on your crypto.
Oh yeah, exactly. So it's not if you're going to do, if you're going to be either taking on or trying to avoid, either way, it's the smarter play to have all your ducks in a row. It's the smarter play to have all the proper paperwork, so you become less of a target, essentially. Where other people, other people argue from the position of, oh, it's slave papers, that type of thing. which I used to do. I used to be that extreme about it. So I understand that position, that it may be smarter, especially if you're somebody who is very heavy into, whatever it is, say we're talking about crypto at the moment. If you're heavy into crypto and it's also very public knowledge that you are, then, probably not the worst idea to maybe be smart about it, I guess, but for me, I still think in this instance, more so than maybe some other ones, it just so seems to defeat the purpose to me.
Right.
To jump through these stupid
hoops. One of the excuses that they were given for crypto going up again in late April is because it's after the tax season. But then, you also have the Korean thing going on, and you also have Let's see, what else do we have going on? Oh, the Muslims are now investing in crypto. So that's a huge market,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, see, that
so
one.
I think it's a,
If out of those three, I think that one would have more of an impact than anyone. You know, I think, didn't we talk?
It's definitely a combination of those among other things that we may not even know of. But that could be one of the larger factors because 1.6 billion
people,
you know, Muslims
having access to
could potentially be investing in cryptocurrencies. Yeah.
Even though I'm sure plenty were doing so beforehand, just like any other religion, there aren't as many people that are super devout that follow everything they're supposed to do. So even though there was supposed to be a ban on it, I'm sure there was plenty of people that were doing so. But yeah, definitely. I've talked about that recently. It might have been on The Fiends. I don't remember. The opening up that market definitely, you could see having a much bigger impact than some of this other stuff. But again, it all could, or, you know, it just could be the normal flow because, well, past couple of years, everything's dipped earlier in the year. And then usually there's been a slow, you know, there's been better as each year's gone on. It seems to be better, you know, with the growth as it goes on through the year.
Yeah.
And last year was a little insane towards the end, obviously.
Well, yeah. It usually does have a strong third quarter and a poor first quarter, but it usually does have a strong second quarter, which is what we're in right now. And the total market cap has been gaining. I think it's up over 400 million now, getting close to 500 billion here pretty soon, hopefully. But Bitcoin dominance is actually falling.
Was it at its height last year, the market? Didn't it hit like 7? Was it 700?
It's like probably 7 or 750. Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but Bitcoin dominance is actually falling, and a lot of this market cap increase is coming from the altcoins. Now, Bitcoin is still going up. It's just not going up as much as the altcoins are right now. And so you got some weird stuff going on in the top 10, like EOS is jumping up ahead. It's like in fifth or something now in market cap because their ICO is almost over and they've raised a lot of, you know, money and they're about to go live. I think their tokens are going to actually become coins or something when the mainnet goes live. So yeah, people are all excited about EOS. And then Cardano is going to be rolling out some more stuff pretty soon. They've got their proof of stake all figured out. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a different looking top 10, I think, this year when it's all said and done.
Should be interesting. Like I said, I haven't been paying enough attention. I probably should. Oh, well, I mean, actually, I probably shouldn't. It's one of those.
You know, so if a bull run starts to come back and it gets popular and the media starts talking about, you know, Bitcoin or crypto again, then we're going to have a lot of new adopters flood in. And a lot of those new adopters are actually going to Bitcoin.com and they're getting this thing called Bitcoin Cash and they're thinking it's the real Bitcoin. So I think a lot of the recent growth we've seen in Bitcoin Cash is a lot of those new adopters who may or may not be actually looking for Bitcoin, you know, legacy Bitcoin, but they're being directed towards Bitcoin Cash. There was a lawsuit, I think, recently that was brought out against Bitcoin.com and Roger Ver about how they were listing Bitcoin Cash as Bitcoin on their website. So like if you were to go there to buy Bitcoin, you know, you would see Bitcoin and Bitcoin Core were the two options. And they didn't even call it Bitcoin Cash. So I think there was like a lawsuit that came out about that. And they ended up changing it back. So now it does say Bitcoin Cash. But yeah, I see what you're doing there, Roger.
Oh, Roger. I started to say maybe I should pay attention, but then I realized, no, I shouldn't. Because, well, I don't have any money to be putting in. I don't really feel like moving anything that I do have. whatever, you know, crumbs I have left after I lost everything in that horrible boating accident, along with all of my firearms that I've talked about plenty of times, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Very tragic, you know, horrible stuff. Still not over it. You know, so whatever, is that what the kids call it these days? Dust that's left in your wallet, you know, the stuff that you can, you might not even be able to get out cause it's not even quite enough, you know, whatever remaining dust I have, you know, I said a long time ago, I would wait until the market picked up all around again before I even considered moving anything around with it and doing anything with it. Cause you know, so.
Yep. I used to have Bitcoin but my dog ate my paper wallets.
I hate when that happens.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I start paying attention, I'll probably get all worked up about it, you know, because it was kind of nice at the end of last year when, that was what, back in November when everything started going really crazy, I guess?
Yeah, November, December.
Yeah, so with the crypto markets and, you know, back then when I was hoping that by now I would be long out of here where I am, and it was like, it was kind of nice to look at everything and go, wow, if I were to just, you know, maybe if I were to cash out what I had before that boating accident, man, I'd, you know, be pretty nice right now.
Yeah. Get you in a Lambo.
Exactly.
Go to the moon.
Yeah.
Go to take your Lambo to the moon.
I was going to go to the moon in my Lambo with my, I was going to say full of, but in a Lambo, you can only really have somebody in the passenger seat. So with, I guess, can you say that on radio? Sex worker.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Oh. Just trying to one-up Elon Musk or something.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. If you're going to do it in style, right?
There you go. Take a Lambo to the moon.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, like you're saying, whatever's going on right now could be attributed to, you know, there's a lot of different factors that I'm sure have a role in it.
Although, yeah, there's a lot of different reasons it should be going up, and the fact that it's only going up steadily is a good healthy sign that it's not overblown speculation.
Yeah. But the timing with the stuff with the Korea talks, and then the timing of it seemed to be picking up too, and then so people trying to attribute it to that. Yeah, it might be. I mean, anytime you open up the market to more people, then you have the ability to reach more people. You have the ability to create more exchanges, and hopefully, you know, usually the way things work out, more wealth for everybody. So
yeah. Yeah, a great majority of the Asian trades in crypto are done through the South Korean exchanges.
Yeah, see, there you go. And then that would open up to all the, well, you know, first the people of North Korea will have to figure out what a computer is.
And then they'll have to use electricity.
Yeah, because it's been kept from them, from the government, you know, or whatever they do. Whatever access to whatever media they do have is still, to this day, unfortunately, is still so restricted that they don't really, you know. Although that's one of those things I used to hear all the time. And then when I started questioning the government, more and going down my path to anarchy and libertarianism and then anarchy, that I was like, well, is that narrative true too? Or are they just lying to us about that? And then I found somebody like I consider him great, Michael Malice. I don't know. Do you know who he is? Michael Malice? He's a...
It rings a bell, but I'm not familiar.
He's an anarchist, but he's a writer, and he's ghostwritten a bunch of books, I think. And then he also wrote, his one book was called Dear Reader, The Unauthorized Autobiography of Kim Jong Il. That was the father, right? That was Kim Jong. Yeah, right. Yeah, that was his dad,
right?
which was amazing. But he actually, like, you know, he knows, he did, I, that guy knows an amazing amount about what actually goes on there. And I've learned to take the word from him. And yeah, apparently to this day, yeah, it's still pretty horrible over there as far as the restriction. When this whole thing got brought up with the talks, and whether Trump gets whoever gets credit for it, regardless, like the fact that it's even happening, when people asked him what he thought of it, he's like, yeah, let's wait and see. Because, you know, sure, it sounds exciting, and, you know, it, you know, if you can look at the entire perspective of the whole North Korea thing as almost any government in the North Korean government position would have kind of, you know, right as far as that goes for a collective of a government, you know, to have an itchy trigger finger when it comes to things like the U.S. and the evil empire, as it were. You know, pretty much any country would, you know, when you're pitted up against them, especially when, sure, you're running a horrible dictatorship or whatever they actually, whatever kind of form, you know, I guess that's a dictatorship, right? Or a family, whatever it is. That whole thing is, you know, obviously it's bad, but, you know, interfering and threatening to interfere constantly. and then interfering at other points, and then threatening to interfere more, and doing things like running, not, you know, freaking out in the media and telling the people in your country that, you know, oh, they ran this missile test, and, you know, oh, they're getting closer and closer to being able to send their nuclear, you know, whatever, just like the threats with anybody else go. But yeah. Meanwhile, the U.S. runs like war games with South Korea, like right on the border, all has been doing exactly. So for years to scare the ever living bejesus out of these people and keep them under, like, you know, you can kind of see why even, you know, horrible government, great, you know, you think governments are good things, whatever, a good government, whatever, anybody in that position would kind of be like, yeah, I can't trust these people, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's called saber rattling when they do that kind of stuff right off their coast, and it not only scares their population, but it, you know, incentivizes them to maintain that state of readiness against an attack. And so what you had going on in North and South Korea was they were both ready at a moment's notice to be attacked by the other one, you know. So it's like you got South Korea, you know, ready to be attacked at any moment by North Korea, and North Korea ready to be attacked by, you know, the West. So, yeah, it was very tense, I guess, on and off over the last 60 years. Because they've had an armistice, but it's like an unsigned one. So it's basically just like a ceasefire in the middle of a war that just never went back to being a hot war, but it was never really a cold war either. So,
yeah, that's what I said at the beginning. It's never, it's technically they've been at war for, I think it's going on 70 years now, right? Just about?
It's over 65, I believe. What was it 50? Close to 70.
Was it 50 that it started? 51? Somewhere in there? Yeah.
Well, I know my grandpa was in that war, and he came back in 53 or 55, something like that.
Although if you listen to people like I do, like the great Scott Horton, who cover the history of a lot of this stuff, and other people too, like other historians I listen to have talked about this. If you actually go back, the war there supposedly has been going on for there, but the U.S. was actually intervening and trying to start it years before then.
That does not surprise me one bit.
They were in there trying to stir up trouble. So, yeah. Good old USSA. Thanks, government. Yeah, but I mean, obviously with that whole thing, it's like you said, it's with the saber rattling thing too. I mean, and that's why, because a lot of, I used to ask, and then I've heard other people since, you know, always ask, like, why don't the people of North Korea do anything about it? You know, if things are so horrible, it's like, well, when you have the access to information limited to you, like, you know, the government is literally limiting the amount of what information gets to you, what knowledge you're able to, you know, gain,
right.
You know, what books are allowable, all that stuff, like all the, you know, dystopian nightmare stuff you've heard of, like a lot of those things happen there. Yeah, they do. So when you have that type, when you already have that type of system, and then you have somebody like the good old USSA or their proxies doing this saber rattling type of stuff all around you constantly. It really doesn't take much to convince a populace that you're just, despite how horrible things may be for you, like how, you know, under the government, like it's still like, they're still better than these horrible people who are out there trying to scare us and threatening to kill us constantly.
Right.
Type of thing.
It's like, yeah, but without a state, who would protect us from other states?
Exactly. So it's very easy. So you could see why the people, although, you know, now the, you know, it is getting harder and harder and harder. And I have heard a lot of talk about that because, like I said, I listen to Scott Horton and a couple other foreign policy stuff. And there's a bunch I've become. That was the one of the areas I used to just ignore because I just figured, you know, the U.S. is horrible at it and they do bad things. And I really didn't need to know more than that. But I've been getting more involved in it lately and trying to learn a lot more about it and the ins and outs exactly of how things have gotten so bad. And yeah, it's tough to go through.
Yeah, that sounds like a good podcast. I've been tried to catch up on Professor CJ in the Dangerous History podcast, but I'll have to check out the other one. Would you say Scott Horton?
Oh yeah, I mean, if you're into if you want to know about foreign policy stuff, the Scott Horton show. I mean, he does a radio show, like an actual radio show out of L.A., but he's had his own podcast for years. It used to be called the Scott Horton Show. I think you can still find it by searching the Scott Horton Show, but he puts it out through the Libertarian Institute, which is the website, the thing he started with Jared LaBelle and Sheldon Richman and the late great Will Grigg. So that's on when the feed that I get it from, that's what it's listed as, the Libertarian Institute Presents, basically, you know, Scott Horton's thing. But yeah, he does an amazing job, talks to reporters and writers who have been there, like seen all this stuff, and like, you know, talks to plenty of former military who have more, you know, not so positive views on the military leanings anymore, stuff like that, you know, people who are more honest. He's amazing. And there's actually another show, if people are, you know, you and other people are interested, that I just found recently, thanks to my buddy Merrick Van Landingham. It's called Foreign Policy Focus. And it's this show that this guy Kyle, I think he's a relatively young guy, because he partners up a lot with this other guy who I found out recently, I think is also a pretty young guy, Will Porter, who does a lot of writing on foreign policy work for a lot of the independent stuff. And he's amazing, like the stuff this guy knows. But he does a podcast, and they're great, because he keeps them relatively short. You know, most, you know, occasionally have like an hour long one, but most of them he tries to keep pretty short and concise, and he just covers a lot of this stuff. And it's just an amazing wealth of knowledge you could pick up from those things.
Right on. Yeah, I've always had an interest in history, and that's why I like, you know, Professor CJ so much. When I get a chance to catch up.
Well, this is present day stuff. Like this, you don't get much.
But
history.
Yeah, this is more current history. Yeah.
If you want understanding, as plenty of people have said, and I definitely agree with, like, if you're going to worry about any particular thing, like the, you know, end the Fed, all these different things, like what's the worst issue facing, like one of the worst issues facing humanity is still war. And the U.S. is, you know, pretty much involved in almost all of it all around the world. So it is the biggest issue of the day, and that's why it is that important that people focus on it. And that's why I'm so thankful for people like Scott Horton and the guy Kyle. I forget his last name, but the guy Kyle who runs Foreign Policy Focus, and those two great websites. I'll try to send those to Michael and have him put links in the show notes. I know he's talked about it. I think he's actually interviewed Scott Horton back in the day. I don't remember, but anyway, I'm looking at the clock. We're probably gonna have to get wrapping up soon. I think we got like another minute or two, but this has been a lot of fun, Shane. So thanks for you started the show, so thanks for having me on tonight, man. This has been great.
Come back anytime.
I guess really quick before we do close out, since I did mention him before, and I, of course, it was gentle ribbing his service that he provides. I am a huge fan of, and we, of course, promote around here, Cell 411, which is the great app that you can get on through the iStore, whatever they call that stupid thing, and the Google Play and other. I think there's other places you can get it through too. Anyway, but Cell 411, the great app that you can keep on your phone, so you can create cells of people that, you know, friends, family, neighbors, even public cells, anybody that you trust more than the monopolized services in your area to take care of any type of emergency, whether it be with the police or, you know, even fire stuff. Maybe you'll want to call a fireman, a volunteer fireman, of course. you know, even medical emergencies, car breaking down, just be able to reach people at a touch of a button, because you can set up your cells and literally all you have to do is press a button and, you know, you open the app, you hit the particular service you need. It's literally just as easy as pushing a button, and that connects to them right away. And sends out a message that everybody lets you know what's going on, and if they need to get to you, also provides turn by turn directions that give you pinpoint accurate directions directly to where you are, so they don't waste any time. And if you, in case you need it, there's also a video service that you can also start streaming immediately. And if for some reason something happens to your phone, like say somebody, some big thug, possibly in the blue uniform, tries to take or smash your phone, the video is stored on the Cell 411 servers for a couple of weeks until you can get your hands on it. So all great stuff. Once again, we love Cell 411, and that is at getcell411.com. So once again, this has been great, Shane. Thanks a lot for having me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.
Worms.
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Benat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.